Hello, hello. You're listening to the Goggler Podcast. Happy New Year, people. Ian Baher and Uma with you. And it's already been quite the week. Tanya Roberts didn't die once, but twice.
Oh.
Sorry, too soon?
It's too soon. A little too soon. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really starting the year off with a kind of an upbeat tone there, Uma.
I don't know. I mean, that for me is one of the weirdest news stories out of Hollywood, right? She had a nap and her agent thought she was dead.
It was worse. It was her husband thought she was dead.
It was her partner, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, America is still going absolutely batshit crazy. But we're back to talk about movies and TV, because that is what we do. How was your New Year, boys?
I was all right.
It was lovely. Yeah, I was very relaxed. I went to a beach resort, social distancing beach resort, and we had one half day of beautiful weather, and it rained the rest of the time.
That is the universe trying to tell you something.
Yeah,
the East Coast is not great for end of the year travel. Yeah,
apparently not. Yeah, but no.
You've lived here how long now, Ian? Did no one tell you that there's flooding everywhere?
Yeah, but some places are fine at Christmas. I don't know. Either way, it was all-inclusive dining and drinking, so we just put on weight, basically. you just sat around the pool, put on weight. What a way to start the year.
It's been an interesting week of content as well. I mean, towards the end of the year, we had a bunch of releases. We're going to talk about Soul, which is one of them. We already covered Wonder Woman. Cobra Kai dropped like a whole week early on Netflix. I think Netflix realized that their calendar was kind of dry in January and needed to push stuff forward.
Dry January. I like that. Nice. Nicely done.
Hey, thank you very much. They also decided we need a fresh dose of Nicolas Cage this month. So they also dropped History of Swear Words, which is the other thing we're going to be talking about on today's show. But let's kick things off with Soul, right? So this was a Disney Plus exclusive in countries where there was Disney Plus, but in countries where there wasn't any Disney Plus, we got to see it in cinemas. Well, if you weren't under lockdown, we didn't get a chance to catch it in cinemas. We caught it on our own Disney Plus accounts because we have those. I don't know about you guys, but I spent quite a lot of the movie crying. It gave me all the feels. This was a movie that was kind of laser targeted towards me and Bahir, I think, because one, it had jazz, and two, it had cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cats thing was something I was not expecting. I was surprised at that.
I was not expecting. Yeah. Did not see that coming at all.
Actually, before we get into it, I have to say, I thought when I had seen the trailer, I was like, oh man, is the trailer giving away too much? Actually, it doesn't. The trailer gives away maybe the first 15, 20 minutes of the film, and then the film goes off in a direction that I wasn't expecting at all, because the trailer makes you think, oh wait, this is like Inside Out but with dead people. And it's not really. It's something quite different.
My friend David said that from the crowd that brought you Inside Out, no shit, it's a copy and paste job. That was on, I think, his initial viewing of the first little bit of it, the movie. I didn't think his kids were into it.
Oh, okay.
What did you guys think, though?
I loved it. I mean, I wanted to put it right back on, but I didn't think I was emotionally ready for it to go again. But I mean, it's, I enjoyed Inside Out, but it wasn't quite the fun, happy animation I was hoping for. And this isn't either, but it's a lot more of that, I think. It's less heavy, I think. Am I reading that right?
Despite being about death?
No, but again, it's not really about death, right? Because they don't really sort of go into it. I like that they avoided the God question. They avoided the religion situation. They didn't go into heaven and hell. It's just, boop, you're done. Here, mentor the next soul coming through, you know? I like how that they focused on what's the most important in their story without getting sidelined by baggage.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think for me, the thing that I loved most about it was the characterization of both Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey and the switcheroos they make throughout the movie, right? And I think there is this characterization that you don't often see in children's animation, in which his character is, I want to say, casually selfish. He's mm-hmm. always thinking right. about himself. And that's something that's highlighted throughout the film, because he's not your traditional hero.
Yeah, but his selfishness is not in a villainy sort of way.
No, it's in a self-obsessed kind of way. It's like, why hasn't anything gone my way kind of way, right?
But not, again, but not in the way that you're saying it, because it, 'cause that sounds like someone who is self-obsessed, which is a negative trait to have, right? In his case...
He's not one of those lost souls. He's not that self-obsessed.
Yeah. He's not Michael Douglas in Falling Down. But at the same time, I think it is a condition that plagues a lot of people, because you can get lost in your own sense of ambition, your own sense of place, your own sense of identity, and completely ignore those around you. I mean, it's a moment that was beautifully highlighted in the scene in the barbershop, where, you know, he's been going there his whole life to get his hair cut, and he knows nothing about the people around him, or those people cutting his hair, or their dreams and ambitions and goals, because he's just kind of sitting there talking about himself all the time.
Oh, no, he's not talking about himself. It's even worse than that. He's talking about jazz.
Oh, that's right.
This, I saw a lot of people in the US complain about, or bring this up along with Wonder Woman 84, about how, actually it wasn't bringing up this, it was bringing up Wonder Woman 84, about how the reception to that movie could be an awful lot tied to the difference between watching it in a cinema, which we did, and watching it at home, and how maybe commentators were being a little, they might be a little more complimentary when it's on a big screen, because it's like the cracks are papered over or something like that. I got the kind of a little bit of that off this, because I watched it in like downtime mode. I didn't have any, wasn't taking any notes. I was watching with my girlfriend, and I think if we had been in a cinema with the lights off and in a room with people, even if they were evenly spaced out, I would have gotten into it more. I couldn't quite get into it because she wasn't getting into it. And the changes between what the through line of the story was, like I enjoyed individual moments of it, but I didn't get the emotional gut punch that like either of you seem to have gotten. It didn't seem to hit me in the same way that something like Inside Out did. I found that the real world, then the hypothetical, was it hypothetical conceptual way station between life and death stuff, like I enjoyed some of that stuff, but then we're back on Earth and then there's other things going on, and then what, you know, the actual main purpose of the movie, or the spark as it were, is also up for debate as to what that is. And I felt by the end of it, the message of that came off as a little muddled. Like, I think the overall message of the movie is, you know, don't wish your life away. I think that's what it came down to. But this concentration at the beginning of, like, before a soul goes to Earth, they have to find their spark. And it changes from just being, like, an interest or your passion. They misconstrue it as that, and it's actually something else. And that was interesting, but I thought that kind of missed the beat in that the whole movie seems to be set up to give Joe's spark be teaching. Like, the actual thing that he's actually... The thing that he's good at, that he's put his life, that he only does as long, he only does it for as long as it takes for him to get to be a jazz pianist. And the thing he does with 22, who I did not realize, again, I knew Jamie Foxx was Joe, but I didn't really think about his voice at all, because this is not feel like the same guy from Project Power at all.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And also Tina Fey, I did not realize it was Tina Fey until I rewatched this morning. I just did not even think of who that was. And and it makes more sense when he says, why do you sound like a middle-aged white lady?
That's right. That was a nice little throwaway. It's great.
But I thought, like, and you know, the thing that made him see that his life was worth it was that he had mentored all these kids and he'd mentored her despite himself or it or whatever it was. And I thought that was the message then was muddled for me. I didn't feel like it was really hitting home then.
For me, I think my only sort of slight complaint about it is that they didn't quite stick the landing for me. Mm-hmm. I think that the abrupt ending that it has, sort of, you're right, Ian. I think if they had stuck the landing, I think the emotional gut punch would have been stronger, maybe, had Joe sort of continued on his journey a little bit more. I think that would have helped. But where it ended the way it did sort of, I wouldn't say pulled me out of the film, but just made me go, oh, okay, so that's how we're going
to
end it.
It's at the end there. Is he going to the jazz club or is he going to the school? Like, that's a question that I think. It's vague in a good way in a lot of areas, but I found that maybe that's part of why I found it a little bit less satisfying. Like, I didn't well up at all. I was like, you know, I think I was crying like a small child at Inside Out, but this was didn't have the same effect on me at all.
Hmm. Bing bong, bing bong.
Yes. Oh, and also,
trigger
and also,
warning.
Did anyone else find it super distracting that Graham Norton was in this? Like, when I saw it first, I thought it was one of those things where they, you know, they put in different voice cast per region.
Okay.
You know, I think they've done it. I can't remember what movie it was before, but there's like, I'm not sure if The Incredibles or Monsters. I think it was the Monsters movies. There was newscasters in some Pixar movie, and the newscasters were different based upon where you were in the world. Yep. And I had to go check IMDb. I seriously thought that it was one of those because I felt it stuck out so completely differently from the characterization and everything else. Or maybe I've just seen too much Father Ted and Graham Norton's talk show.
But I think it's that. I think Graham Norton has such a distinctive voice. And you're right about Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey because they kind of blend into their characters. But as soon as Graham Norton shows up, I'm just like, oh my God, that's Graham Norton.
Yeah. And it's the opposite with Rachel House because like you recognize her voice straight away, the Kiwi accent, but it's like, this makes perfect sense for her character. It's like it's the exact same character she played in Thor Ragnarok and Hunt for the Wilder People. Like, she's just that kind of officious, bossy Kiwi lady. And it's like, yep, that's it. That's Rachel House.
But going back to what you were saying, Ian, I kind of disagree with that because I think I like that they didn't over explain that stuff, and I think that's I like the vagueness of it. I kind of always figured from the beginning of the film that teaching was going to be his spark or his life's purpose, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I like that they didn't necessarily spell that out to the audience. I think the most obvious they got was when the girl with the trumpet shows up and he's just like, let's get out of here. Let's move on. I've got to go get a suit. I've got to go do my thing. Yeah. And she's like, I want to give up the trumpet. And I thought that whole moment was absolutely beautiful where she was like, oh, she really loves it.
Mm.
And she's really good at it. And yeah. And so I think I like the various methods and moments that they used to drive home that point. And that's why I didn't have a problem with the ending, because by the time I got there, I already knew what they were saying. I didn't need anyone to spell it out for me. So I quite liked that approach. Zootopia, by the way, it just hit me. Zootopia was the one where the newscasters were different voices from different countries.
And it was super distracting. Don't do that. Just give us one voice cast, please. I mean, obviously if your language is not English, fine. And that's one thing actually that I started to wonder when I watched it the second time this morning, because it wasn't, even with my super review focus head on, you can't capture that first initial watch anyway. And the thing that really hit me was the really, like, it's in the credits as well, like the amount of cultural advisors and racial advisors and faith advisors they've had on this, and how, apart from Tina Fey, like everyone who's cast is cast as their race in a way, which is like, it's no, there's no race baiting or race switching or race bending, I guess is what the way they call it. So like, you know, David Diggs plays a character who's black, you know, there's the Indian doctor is played by an Indian lady, you know what I mean? That goes through everything, you know, it's every shop. Seems to be in the background, seems to be like, you know, the different types of Mexican restaurants or Jamaican restaurants and everything that are all over New York. And I thought that was really well done. That's like sidestepping. That's something that every film, animated or not, probably needs to do if it's outside their wheelhouse. I'm sure it's like Pete Docter. It's a lot of white people making this movie. So it's probably a good idea to get some cultural advisors in there.
Yeah, I think actually what had happened was fairly early on in the storytelling, they had got in another writer called Kemp Powers. I think he's written a couple of Star Trek stuff, actually. So they brought him in, I guess, to sort of ensure there was no race issues that were being stepped on by white directors and white writers.
That reminds me, Rashida Jones was involved and then left under a kind of a silent cloud, right?
Was it this
yes.
one?
That was
yes,
this,
it
one.
Was
she's
on
in,
this one.
She's in the credits, but so is Bill Hader and so is Frank Oz under the
it
thanks
feels
section.
Like- I think they're under they're given the story by credit, right?
Oh, are they? I noticed them when they got to the bottom. I'd forgotten. It was so long ago that I'd forgotten all about the Rashida Jones thing. It's just like, I think she'd been paid handsomely to keep her mouth shut. So she's like, it was fine. Whenever anyone asks her about, like, so what happened with Saul? She just goes, quiet coyote.
I wonder if it was just one of those things where they were involved in the Pixar sort of brain trust thing.
If you get to the credits, because you know I watched.
There's also the brain. Yeah,
the brain trust has their own set of credits. So it was like, I missed her under story, but there is special thanks at the very bottom, and there's a lot of some people are listed with their institutes, whether it's a church or a study, you know, like a college or university or something like that. So, I mean, it's interesting because it doesn't feel like it's. I don't think anyone's complained about it. There's no.
Yeah.
The only thing that anyone's pointed out to me repeatedly about this movie is that it has, you know, the grocery store, or not the grocery, the hardware store is selling 9-inch nails.
Yes.
I have to say, though, of the Pixar movies that have come out over, I don't know, the last few years, ever since Inside Out, I think Good Dinosaur, Finding Dory, Cars, the third Cars, if you want to count that, other than Coco, I think this is probably one of the most visually inventive of the lot. Like, because Toy Story, Incredibles, even Onward, kind of stuck to a very similar style. But, you know, when he's falling through the ground and he becomes two-dimensional and black and white. And
when he falls through Interstellar and then passes through Vib Ribbon and ends up
in
real life. It's like, okay.
Exactly.
That thing, what happens when you go into the great beyond, the, like, you know, ending with the damp squib that is the great beyond, as well as the lost souls. I don't know. I'm wondering how kids are treating this, because some of that stuff is Lynchian in, like, its freakiness. Like,
it is.
This popping noise as you go into the light is, like, kind of horrifying. It's like, is that it? That's everything. This is all of your life, all of your memories amounts to just boop.
But even the depictions of Rachel House, I mean, the depictions of Terry and Jerry, like, they're so abstract and weird.
There's quite an interesting story about that, actually. Apparently, the first versions of the story, Joe is an artist. So the depictions of Jerry and Terry is lines, because something he recognizes.
Yeah.
Apparently. So I'm not sure if that's true. I saw that in a tweet somewhere. But, like, that could be an interesting way around it, actually.
And I should have spotted Brent. What's her name? Braga? I forget her first name all of a sudden.
Alice Braga.
I should have spotted her voice the first time around. Richard Ayoade obviously is super stick out. Wes Studi is one of the Jerrys.
Yes, Wes Studi is one of the Jerrys. Also, the other kind of standout, of course, is Felicia Rashad, who is his mom, and you just recognize that after years of watching The Cosby Show, you're like, mom!
Oh, yeah, it's Claire Huxtable, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's TV mother, right? And yeah, I mean, I think Pixar did the voice casting again in an incredible way, because I think all of the characters, I mean, even Questlove, kind of all the voices blend into their characters. And I think that was something I never get when I'm watching The Croods or whatever, because the famous person kind of sticks out and I'm just like, yes, this is Alec Baldwin. This is Ryan Reynolds. You know, that's very apparent.
It's stunt casting.
It is stunt casting. Yes. And I think that's something that stands out with Pixar, which allows me to actually get lost in the story as opposed to giggle at the fact that Jamie Foxx has said something funny.
And it's interesting because, like, it's something you mentioned, Ian, Jamie Foxx's Joe doesn't sound like Jamie Foxx doing a Joe.
No.
You know what I mean? It helps that it doesn't look like Jamie Foxx, but I knew it was Jamie Foxx, and as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, it doesn't sound like him. You know, it doesn't have his loud, over the top personality. He sounds like a middle-aged jazz pianist living in New York.
Yeah, he's doing something that he didn't really do in The Spectacular Spider-Man or in Project Power. He's acting. I didn't recognize it at all. What age is he? I mean, like, Joe is of indeterminate age. Like, he has his middle-aged spread and everything like that, and the flecks of gray in the hair. But
Jamie Foxx is in his 50s.
Yeah, but he just comes off as just, he's doing jazz in the voice, man. He disappears into a role. And I think that's something as well, when you talked about the look of the design of the movie, I think that's something as well that probably gets lost on a lot of people as well, was when, just after the scene where the cat is falling asleep in the sun and you just have like a shot of the two of them on the floor and there's the rays of light coming through the window, when the characters step out of those shots or when it shows the street from far away, like, it's horrifyingly amounts of work to make it look like I just pointed a camera at the street. Like, it's probably, you know, people are, it's like, I made this. It's like, what? You just, even that shot, I'm sure I'm sure they rendered those shots of New York as the pullout shot happens near the end.
Yeah, I remember watching something about a couple of years ago about how Pixar figured out very early on that the best way to do those shots would be to figure out how to render based on the lenses. So if would you use a telephoto lens, a 22 telephoto lens, a 35 mil telephoto lens, you know, a 35 mil lens, and figure out what the light does to all that? So that's why. And so, yeah, you're right, Ian. It's not, you know, it's not.
It doesn't slap you around the head. It's the same as when I think we all noticed it when we saw Toy Story 4 and we're halfway through. Or I think it's the beginning. They did show off in that. I think it's where Woody's lying on the driveway covered in rain. Yeah. And we're like, that's the most beautiful rain-covered driveway I've ever seen. There are tears coming unbidden to my eyes for this driveway. Oh, look, Buzz is here.
And it's the same, man. I mean, I think it goes a long way when we kind of forget that we're watching animation. All of those street shots of New York when he's lying down over the grates and, you know, everything looks almost... It's not quite photoreal, but it's enough. Like, it doesn't look uncanny in any way, which is very, very cool.
Yeah.
In your... Because we all have our rankings of Pixar movies. Where would you rank Soul? Like, for me, it's way up there with Toy Story 3 and Inside Out, and I have those right up there. I just found it emotionally impactful that it belongs in that category one of Pixar movies.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Yeah.
Is this where you announce that you're leaving the podcast to go do teaching?
I found my spark.
I mean, it's definitely above The Good Dinosaur because, man, that was.
Oh, fuck off. Everything is above The Good Dinosaur. Come on.
That's why I was stating the obvious. I don't know.
Age is above The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The first one, maybe. Yeah. I don't know if I'll be rewatching this one as I've seen it twice now, and I don't think it has that same pull. Whereas I think Inside Out is one I saw that devastated me. I don't think I've seen Inside Out a second time. And. Mm. It wouldn't be an ordeal, but it would be a task to sit down and watch. Not a task. I would enjoy the task, but it would be something where I would need to be
prepared to get up for it. Yeah.
And I think the Toy Story movies are a little bit like that as well. Like, I mean, now especially because I don't think I've seen two since the cinema. So now it's the thing where we've started reaching the later seasons of House and I'm hearing Irish bands turn up that I used to listen to a lot, but then I listened to too much. So now they're locked off in that period of time. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing, I listen to it, it's going to be that. Toy Story 2 will do that as well. So I don't tend to go back, actually, to an awful lot of the Pixar movies. So maybe this just fits in nicely with all of that. But I just didn't think it rated that highly. And I don't think it'd be in my top five. I wouldn't know what they were, but I don't think it was that high up there for me.
Ooh.
I actually have a top five list written down, but yeah.
Ooh.
Along with my favorite kinds of French fries. But anyway.
I've seen that list, actually. It's a pretty good list.
Yeah, thank you.
This would definitely be in the sort of top tier for me. I think up there with Toy Story 4. Again, I can't even begin to list them out in order, but it's definitely in that top grouping for me personally.
Have you seen Soul yet? Let us know if you have and how you have. Actually, we're curious if you ventured out to Malaysian cinemas and caught it there or wherever you're listening to this podcast, whether it's actually showing at a cinema near you or not. You can, of course, get in touch with us on all of our social media feeds at GogglerMY, also podcast@goggler.my. Now that I have your attention while you're listening, don't forget to rate us on all of your podcast apps. Put a comment, tell your friends, tell your family, tell them how great we are. Up next, we're going to be talking about the brand new docu-series that's dropped on Netflix. It's called History of Swear Words. You might have seen the trailer. It had Nicolas Cage in it. The internet was going kind of crazy about it. And essentially, Nicolas Cage hosts a comedy documentary series about the history of swear words. It is exactly what it says on the tin. Ian's review is up on the site right now, goggler.my. Ian, you enjoyed it.
Yes.
I enjoyed it, but I wasn't completely into it. Like, I loved... So it's a bit like... Okay, so just for people who want to know, Nicolas Cage is doing the whole Masterpiece Theater thing. He's kind of sitting on a couch with like a trolley of booze next to him. And he's talking about fuck and pussy and shit and damn and all that stuff. I have to say the Damn episode was really impressive because in my head I was like, is Damn really that bad? I mean, we've covered fuck and shit and pussy and all that stuff. And I thought that episode was kind of enlightening. So I enjoyed it because I learned a ton of new stuff. But for me, the talking heads involving the comedians, because they had a whole bunch of stand-up comics, felt a little pointless because they didn't seem to... Like, all of the experts added all this interesting information. And even Nicolas Cage in self-deprecation mode was quite fun. But the stand-up comics just kind of made snippy comments and then laughed a little bit. And I was like, no, wait. You can talk about how clean comedy
they
versus
could have gone,
dirty comedy gone into and all of that. So I thought that was a missed opportunity.
I think, well, I mentioned my review. I think my expectations were so far in the toilet that maybe that's why it didn't bother me. Because
you just watched Jiu-Jitsu.
There was that. I mean, there was that, but there was also the fact that, like, I'm kind of like after the what was it the Christmas movies that made us. It's not the same kind of thing, but it is that kind of like multiple heads talking about things, and they went overboard on that one and inserting useless crap to fill their time. But I mentioned in my review as well, I remember there wasn't just the I Love series. I think it was I Love 1980s, 1970s, 1990s on the BBC. Around the turn of the century, there was... Turn of the century. What a great phrase to say these days. Jesus Christ, how old are we? There was a whole load of other shows that were just like kids. I don't know, Channel 4 and our BBC had them at the time. And it was just like... They had a Rolodex of middle-tier comedians and TV stars that they could always get. And they were always say the same. They could always be guaranteed to trot out the same shitty anecdotes about stuff. And it really drove the whole kind of format into the ground. And that's all I was thinking of when I saw the trailer with the... Like, I had my concerns about Cage. And I also thought he would only be at the end. I did really like that. Even with those comedians, they were weaving everything so well together that I don't know how long before COVID or during COVID it was made. Because... Even when those comedians were just, you know, dropping off stuff, there was way more of a thread than I'm used to in these shows. Right. Like, they were presenting that, like, I don't know whether they must have done the experts first because they don't really hit off what everyone else is saying and then presented some of that to the comedians who then riffed. But it just felt like they were more together. And then to have Nicolas Cage's voiceover or in person pop up in the middle as well, I was like, okay, this feels, it doesn't feel like what these shows usually are, which is just a cheap way to cycle some footage.
Oh, yeah. You mean like Death to 2020?
I didn't watch it. You said it was bad.
I don't bother, yeah.
That everything you just described, Ian, was that. Like,
and that's my fear of watching those kind of shitty shows.
Yeah. And I think you're right in that the way they stitched all of this together, it did feel like it was done over COVID because I think that really restricted the kind of access they had. And so most of the comedians you see are Netflix friendly. They're either on Netflix's payroll somehow or they've all done shows with them.
I presume that was also like what this was. We've got all these people on the payroll. Let's know. Because I've never watched the Nikki Glaser. It's always tricky. Like watching a comedy special for someone you don't know on Netflix is always tricky. And like even when I rewatched Raw last year, we had to turn it off because it was too much. It was just like, this is just really, this is 50 years old, man. This is really bad. This is not bad. It's just like, it's really insensitive and nasty and old.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that with trying someone else, I think I might have glancingly heard of Nicola Glaser. I'd never heard of the London Hughes and some of the others. And they were funny. Like I would this show did what I presume it was designed for, which is to make me want to go and look at their specials on Netflix. Because I presume that it was half, we need a vehicle for all our stable of talent in order to get like, the sampler plate, as it were, and if we can get a large slice of cheese on the edge of that platter in the form of Nicolas Cage, all the better. And I don't know. You talk about his character in this. I don't know if it's like some of him or whether it's the writer. Whoever's the writer just needs to write Nicolas Cage his parts for the next couple of movies.
Yeah, the writer.
They have a very
Nicolas Cage's writer. Yeah, from now on.
They have a very good honing in on what his actual perceived character is and playing him into it where it doesn't feel like he's nodding or winking to the camera. Like that opening moments of just running through the greatest fuck lines from movies. Like I'm waiting for the ASMR MP3 file that's just the Nicolas Cage parts.
I'm kind of with you on that. I'm split between the two of you because I was really enjoying the first episode. So me and my wife sat down for the first episode and then she had to go and do, you know, work. So I then kept watching the others. And I think when you watch it as a binge, it's sort of, there's a diminishing returns thing.
Yeah.
I think the first episode you put on to hear Nicolas Cage throw out the words fuck so quite easily, to then go into, you know, dick and all the other words just becomes a little less.
Yeah, I think it's fuck, then shit, then dick, then pussy, yeah, then damn, it's five, right? No, I'm missing one.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think don't watch it in a binge, because it doesn't quite work that way. You put on over lunch, you laugh a bit, and then you sort of go on and move on with your day.
Congratulations, Netflix. You've invented a YouTube series.
I was just going to say, at 20 minutes, it's a great YouTube watch.
And you know what? The producer, it was produced by the...
It's produced by Funny and Die. Funny or Die, right?
Funny or Die, yeah. So which is very much that vein of 20-minute comedy, but not over long periods.
But I have to say, I think the director, Christopher D'Elia, not the comedian Christopher D'Elia.
Yeah, I had to look that up to double check. Yeah, very different person. Yeah,
different person. But the director, Christopher D'Elia, does a very good job. I mean, I think you pointed this out as well, Ian. It's just the way he's structured, especially compared to the movies that made us. It could have easily gone down that route where they try to force chuckles.
Yeah.
In the way they edit and they cut and the kind of narrative voiceover they do, but they don't. And I think that's a really... Because they play it straight for the most part. Even Nicolas Cage is playing it straight throughout. And I think that helps a lot, because you find yourself actually laughing at the jokes and not because you're being triggered to laugh. And that was something that Death to 2020 didn't do very well at all. Because watching Death to 2020, it made me realize how difficult it must be to write comedy these days, because so many of your jokes are already done by people on Twitter.
Yeah.
And by non-comedians on Twitter. So either you've heard them before, like you've heard that COVID joke before, or you've heard that joke about the assassination of the Iranian general before, or it's worn a little thin. And I think that was the problem with Death to 2020. Meanwhile, with History of Swear Words, I think they called back on just the right kind of movies. You know, calling back to The Wire was fantastic. So they knew how to use all they knew how to use those pop cultural bits to their advantage, right?
Yeah, they knew that it was going to get wearing if it was the same thing. And correct. I think they were very smart with regards to the experts they got. Melissa Moore, Coney Stamper, Benjamin Bergen, Elvis Mitchell and Mirelle Miller-Young. They're all incredibly entertaining. They've all written books, which is why, I mean, I guess they're all done speaking tours as well. But they're all incredibly entertaining, well-read, thought-out people. Like the fact that Corey Stamper, as I mentioned in my review, she's the one who got Miriam Webster to say that, to put it in the dictionary, that bitch is a slur. And they were hugely entertaining, and then they didn't shy away from that. Like Nicolas Cage is in on it. He says, like, you know, I'd rather not call a woman a bitch. He's a gentleman. And they don't shy away from that. They didn't say, like, they just didn't just play a whole lot of rap tracks with bitch on it. They looked into how it became a gendered slur and how it's being reclaimed, and the same with pussy and everything else. And even the damn one was like, there's a point at the end, they say, damn is now where shit will be in 20 years and where fuck will be in 100 years. And it's just that beautiful thing about language evolving over time. And we're moving away today, most from slurs that are, was it sexual, bodily functions, or there was a third one as well. We're moving away from that into more back into slurs again, back into like identity slurs as opposed to anything else. And that was just hugely interesting and not what I was expecting from the show. So I think they did know when to lean into that and when to not. And when to interrupt the format completely just to get Isaiah Whitlock Jr. in there. And that was just like, oh, I was like, because I was thinking, are they going to do it? And then, oh yeah, there we go. I was like, that's perfect. Yeah. I'm happy now.
Also, how cool is it that Corey Stamper was in charge of profanities at Merriam-Webster? That's a great fucking job.
I think also what the show does very well is it breaks down the context of the word over a period of time, right? So like you were saying, Ian, it's not just bitch was used as a slur and then bitch was used in, you know, music, in rap music in the 80s and the 90s.
And no, we're gonna go back to the 1500s or something like that. Correct. Where it starts off as a dog, but then it's an affectionate term for a woman or wife, and then it turns into just woman, and then it goes from just woman to being a slur. Oh yeah, it was so interesting.
Yeah, and I've finally gotten the answer to a question that's bugged me for years, which is, how is Richard how is the short for Richard Dick? I thought that was a beautiful... The explanation of that, Robert and Bob, I was just like, oh, now I know. Oh, that was great.
1500s England, they fucking love shortening shit with rhymes.
Yeah, they shorten it and then rhyme it, right?
So, yeah.
But also going back to the 1500s, just the people with words like fucking their name, for example.
Oh, yeah, the fucker.
The fucker. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great little example. I mean, for the longest time, I was convinced about fornication under consent of the king. I was convinced that was a real thing.
Oh no, yeah, I knew that was not true. But it's glad that it's been put out there now. Yeah,
they did a nice job of like getting, you know, for future generations, disabusing us of those notions. Although they didn't talk about foreign lawful carnal knowledge, which is one I always heard.
Oh, forgot about that.
Yeah, and also if they're doing The Wire,
they didn't do the fuck thing.
They didn't do the fuck thing. Was it fuck? It was fuck. Was it fuck or was it shit? And with the crime scene investigation.
Yeah.
McNulty and his and Bunk, when it's just like fuck. I think it's it. Yeah, that was, I was surprised. But I mean, there was a lot of fucks to go around in that first episode, and I think it was worth it for Jim Jeffries' fuck family tree, because that was just
that was great. That had me
laughing my fucking ass off.
I want that poster.
Yes.
I mean, I think the other one that they missed out was, what was it? Cheech's pussy descriptions in Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah. Oh, Dust Till Dawn, yeah.
Dust Till Dawn, dude.
I guess they didn't have the rights to that, because they talk about the song Bitch from the late 90s, early 2000s, yeah. But they don't play any of it.
They don't, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And even the movie clips, it feels like they were just teetering on fair use, right? They're super short, like 15 seconds.
Yeah. Some YouTube
And I think, again, they're all probably available on Netflix.
Yeah, History of Swear Words is now streaming on Netflix. You can check it out. It's 6 episodes. Like Ian pointed out in his review, we'll probably get a Christmas special with the word cunt.
You went there.
I did. Well, you know what? I was surprised they didn't have the cunt word, the C word, yeah. Because it feels like when it comes to profanity at the moment right now, that's still the most offensive.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's superseded fuck.
Yeah.
And actually, it's interesting. If you look at the show on Netflix, some of them have asterisks and some of them don't. Yeah. Like, fuck, I think, does. Bitch doesn't, obviously. So it's interesting to see. You can see taboos in action.
I'm surprised no one referenced Carlin's 7 dirty words.
That's the other thing I was waiting for. I was thinking that someone, because it's on TV, I was thinking that someone would talk about what you can and cannot say on TV now.
Because that was the title of that joke, right? The 7 dirty words you can't say on television. So
correct.
I mean, of course, because I'm just looking at the list now. Shit, yeah, okay, that was in there. But piss, I'm just like, okay, maybe piss and tits are not. Unfortunately, that's come into
they faded.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, I'm glad it's not in use, but also at the same time, it's not as dramatic as something like fuck, I think.
Yeah,
so,
it's not going to cause great offense.
Yeah, I think I'm surprised they sort of didn't even reference that.
I don't know. I think season 2, I think that's probably what they're saving up for, man.
I think the C word is the C word in the crown, basically, when they go for that. Like, that would be it. And then they could roll into cocksucker and motherfucker as well.
Correct.
I hope no one's listening to this in the drive home with the kids.
Oh yeah. By the way.
Oh yeah. I think I did mention don't watch it with your fucking kids. Like, seriously, my God. Like, they don't. It's not like some coy BBC show where they try to talk around these things or anything. Yeah. They go. Oh, I mean, the presence of Sarah Silverman is enough to let you know it's going to be that. Like, I mean, it's just they just go for it, and just like every profanity under the sun is out there.
History of Swear Words is now streaming on Netflix. Is it binge worthy? Maybe not, but it's a good watch for 20 minutes at a time over lunch. That is by his recommendation. You can check out Ian's review on goggler.my. Before we wrap, we've got a bunch of stuff on social media to talk about. Actually, we got an email because Transformers, War for Cybertron, Chapter 2, Earthrise, worst title ever, is back on Netflix. I mean, this is the second part of it that's dropped on Netflix.
Attack of the Colons.
which means we get an email from Marcus again, who goes, here we go again. Genocide and Skylinx in all his goofy bird dog space shuttle silliness, in all caps, total dissonance. Discuss. As always, thank you for humoring me. So I sat down and watched the series yesterday. It's very short because It's 20 minutes each and it's 6 episodes, right? So you're done in about 2 hours.
don't get it, some horrible programming bug could end up with it being crossed over with the swear word show.
correct. But Marcus is right. Like, just like the first season, this is some total bleak shit. Like, it is so dark and dismal. And the crazy thing is, nothing really happens in these 6 episodes until the last 2 episodes, where they do something kind of clever and try and tie it back into Transformers the movie.
Right.
Huh. And it's that really took me by surprise, because, like, Optimus gets this vision of the future and Megatron meets Galvatron, who's nice. Trying to convince him to do something else. So these little things happen.
Is this a time travel space bridge issue? Because I'm always on board. I think there was something interesting happened in the first series as well, but I didn't get that far on it.
Correct. So there is a space bridge, but this is something involving what's called the Dead Universe, which is essentially the Phantom Zone, where Alpha Trion banished robots that were misbehaving.
Can I just say half those names I don't recognize? But
I know.
I think you said
this
the last time we talked about the show. Alpha Trion is the
move along.
Alpha Trion is the sign where, like, you know that guy in front of the car who just has the flag that says, like, all right, you know, Bahir can just stop for a minute and just, you know, zone out. It's Alpha Trion time. All right, wake me up when it's done.
But it's a weird series, and I think that's what I want to talk about, because I don't know who it's for. Like, there's no enjoyment that kids are going to get out of this. It's so bleak and dismal. Like, everyone's dead or dying, and, like, there's no bright colors or shininess. Optimus is spending 6 episodes talking about being forgiven and how he's made so many mistakes. I don't know why they're doing this to the Transformers.
Is it a show made for Zack Snyder?
It feels like Zack Snyder's Transformers. It's really weird.
It's particularly weird because, A, it's G1. We're
it's pre-G1, right?
But the people making it, like, to make this kind of show, the people who should be making this are the people who are, like, you know, played with their Transformers a little too late in their adolescence. They played with it until further into their adolescence than their peers. And they were always like, no, Transformers is really cool, man. It's not toys. It's epic. It's mythology. And who are now doing, like, I finally get to do the dark. Like, it literally is the dark, gritty reboot, right?
It is. That is exactly what it is.
But that happened twice already, right? Like, we had the Bayformers, but even, I think, I mean, Transformers, I was into a podcast talking about Gundam the other day and about how they never continue Gundam. They just do another universe story, and it's basically, and then they just do the same themes with different faces. In a way, I'm sure going to piss off some people with that, but they were summarizing. There's some podcast called The Gundam Project where they're watching them all 2 episodes at a time. It's going to take them 20 years, apparently, to catch up.
Jesus.
But this is, like, they've done this. Like, there's one point I was like, I'm interested in that I've forgotten which series the cool motorbike guy I have here, or there's a Grimlock I have here, which is not the original Grimlock because I'm not made of money, but it's the one that from the cartoon that looked the most like the old Grimlock and was kind of cool looking. And I've forgotten which continuity that is. And then I go looking into it and then I just get tired and have a lie down because there's so many things going on there and they are all just over and over again. It's like, we've done this. It's like, there's no, what's the next one? Is the next one, like, you know, Starscream actually is a psychopath? He actually is Jack the Ripper or something? Like, there's only so dark you can go.
Exactly. And I think that's the problem with the series, right? It's just rehashing the old stuff for potentially a new audience.
Mm.
But is it? Or is it just rehashing the old stuff for the existing audience who are just, like, going to go, yeah, it's metal now?
Maybe the Zack Snyder stands, right? I mean, because they use old lines as well. So they will just, they know what are the key lines from whether it's an episode of the original series or from the movie. And then they'll have a character utter that one line. And I'm like, okay, so that's just for the fan to go, ooh. But that's it. And so, I mean, it's not bad. Like, it's not terrible. It's just kind of pointless.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of why.
So the Skylinks participate in the genocide?
No. So this is the weird thing. With the Skylinks thing, Skylinks wanted the Matrix of Leadership, but he wanted it too much because he was an arrogant asshole and then got banished to the Phantom Zone, right?
Okay.
Although this is before they've gone to Earth, so I don't know why Skylinks is still a space shuttle. which makes no sense.
Oh,
at all.
I was going to ask. He's literally a shuttle. It's not like the weird kind of, because some of that first series
he's
as well.
He's a space shuttle dinosaur is what he is.
Oof. Yeah, so the some of that first series, because I remember, I don't know, I had the demo or I got it cheap. There was the War for Cybertron game and, you know, the ships, they looked alien. Their robot form, their vehicle forms. It was
which
like
is
it
what
was
they're
a,
supposed to be.
It was the robot equivalent of jogging. You know, I'm going to get some wheels because it's going to be fun. I'm going to get some flying. It was like evolution in action. But I think in the first series, Optimus Prime has windows in his chest, and I'm like, why does he have windows? There's no one getting inside.
This is the same problem this series has, because all of the other characters, say Bumblebee or whatever, Bumblebee is not a Volkswagen, right?
Yeah,
which is fine. But Optimus Prime is still a fucking truck.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and I did like the first
no
season
sense.
As well. The all the swoops look like they look like Battlestar Galactica Vipers. They were like triangular flying things. It's like that was cool.
Except when they transform, and then it looks like, oh wait, you would transform into an F-16.
Yeah, you look like an off-brand version of what they call Valkyries from? What was that from? Macross. You look like a Macross robot. Robotech. Yeah. You look like an off-brand Robotech.
So, I mean, you know, how we were talking about Soul being visually inventive, the design elements in this series are all over the fucking joint.
Well, the animation was dodge in the first one as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the same thing with this one. And I think that's a problem that I have with a lot of these shows that go direct to TV. Even though they're really, really good. Say like the Jurassic Park Camp Cretaceous thing, which was a very, very clever show. And it really stayed true to, I guess, the ethos of Jurassic Park. You have a TV budget. So the animation looks super fucking janky. But of course, nobody wants to do hand-drawn anymore. Everyone wants to do 3D CGI. And it just ends up looking a bit cheap. There's no texture. There's no depth, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me wonder how, listen to a few Kevin Smith podcasts over Christmas, like himself and Mark Bernardin are quite happy with what they're seeing from the Masters of the Universe show, which will come on to Netflix maybe this year. I'm not sure. They're getting the early animation on that. And it sounds like it's going to be, they're very excited about it. But then again, you know, Kevin Smith's very excited about everything he does up until they come out. And then it's like, oh, mistakes were made. I do wonder if they're going to do that for Masters of the Universe, because they don't think, as much as Transformers can't handle that treatment, I don't think Masters of the Universe really can't handle that treatment.
No. I mean, they've come a long way since Beast Wars, but it still isn't great.
Yeah, Beast Wars is just unfortunate. Any animation that came out around that time that was computer generated just looks like ass.
Yeah,
there's nothing you can be. Like, I mean, it might be the storytelling might rival that of the Arthurian legends, but I'm sorry, everything just looks so goddamn shiny.
Transformers, War for Cybertron, Chapter 2, Earthrise on Netflix, before we move on. Yeah. Go check it out if you're a Transformers fan, because Marcus, who wrote in, just has bad things to say about both seasons so far. But if you're a Transformers fan, you want to know what you think about this. Is it in line with your childhood memories, or has it completely ruined it? Also, we put out a question on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook about what the first things you watched in 2021, and we got a ton of responses. And so I did a quick kind of categorization. And essentially, in order on Instagram, it was Bridgerton. A lot of people are watching Bridgerton. And then it was Cobra Kai.
Yep, we got a couple of Cobra Kais on Twitter.
And then single responses. My favorite, of course, Band of Brothers. Someone's late for the party, but it's okay.
But welcome.
That's Adlin Murphy, who says she's watching The Pacific now, but is not into it because no one is as cute. I can also agree with that. Also, Ollie says he watched Sabrina, the final season, and it was a bit meh.
All right.
Although he does say that, because they brought back the two aunts, that was the big cameo for this season. And he said that was actually the best episode, because they did an episode where they kind of paid homage and tribute to the original Sabrina.
Oh, you mean the original Hildy and Zildy came back? But they didn't bring back, I blanked her name. How can I blank on her name?
Melissa Joan Hart.
Melissa Joan Hart. I have problems with triple barrel names. I always have.
No, I haven't seen it, but I don't
never
think
had
they
heard
did.
It. Yeah, because I wanted to check out. I saw some article on, like, you know, what you've been missing. Because I had huge problems with the first season when, after being told, I think you remember this by here, after being told that, like, you know, the devil is basically wants your soul. How would you even go to, why would you go to school? Why would you, like, why wouldn't that, like, That should take up your every waking hour. How do I get out of this? It's not like, oh, I wonder how my friend's doing with her relationships. Like, what the fuck? No. You have bigger problems right now. I can totally buy into the witches and the devil and walks around and all this kind of stuff. But that's just unrealistic, man.
It's not just the devil wants your soul. He wants to marry you.
Yeah, he became married. I saw at some point there's two of her, apparently, from a pocket universe. So they got into some weird shit in season 2 and 3.
I didn't get that.
This is like what you need to know to catch up. And I was like, I'll have a quick scan. What the fuck? There's another Sabrina from like a time loop who now lives in hell with Satan as the queen of hell.
Oof!
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, they talked about that show as if it was like finishing prematurely, but they seem to have gotten a lot in those 4 seasons.
Yeah,
they went very far.
I finished season one. I thought I caught the first 2 episodes of season 2, and then I kind of fell out of it hard. There was just too many other things to watch. What else have you got? Rachel says Death to 2020. Arvin says rewatch one of my happy series, Lilyhammer. I watch it every year around Christmas. Must be all that snow. I love Lilyhammer, actually. It's a great show.
That's the gangster who goes to Lilyhammer, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. The guy from Sopranos, right?
Sopranos.
Yeah.
And he
was not the same character, the actor. Yeah.
But yes.
Also, Joanna Lumley's travel documentaries, which have dropped on Netflix recently.
I've been avoiding that one only because.
Why? She's great.
Because if I watch it, then I want to travel.
Oh, okay. There is.
We're using it as a proxy. I was like, you know, because regularly I'll say to you guys, what was I talking about when I said there was something like, forget what we review now. I started the letterbox.
Yes. No,
so
right.
I could keep track. I could just see an actual list because it's harder to see it in our website interface, which is the actual list. And the letterbox is nothing this year because we're just watching the Joanna Lumley shows. We've already done Japan. We're midway through the Trans-Siberian Railway. And,
is that good?
They're all great. The only problem is Joanna Lumley. And I did have her narrating Rupert the Bear on tape as a kid. Oh. And there is an awful urge to just like, I mean, it's like she's the inventor of ASMR, you know? Like you're just listening to it. My girlfriend just passes the fuck out listening to it because she's like, she's so relaxing. It's like, but it's by about the third or fourth time Joanna has said, lovely. That's when the girlfriend's gone. She just conked out. Yeah. It's not boring. It's very engaging. It's just, she's so chill.
Bob Ross does that for me as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I never did that for him.
Oh, man.
Also, Burn Like Cinder says that she's a bit late, but she's finally catching up with all of the new Doctor Who because there was a new special that just dropped on New Year's. I'm also like a whole season behind on Same. Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But the new special's kind of cool because the Daleks are back. Yay.
Twice. I think there's two types of Dalek.
There's always Diet and Regular. New Daleks. Yeah, exactly.
And you're bearing the lead. Captain Jack Harkness is back
again. Of course. Jack Harkness is back after many, many years. After, you know, now that he's done with Arrow, he's gone back to Doctor Who. What was the first thing you watched in 2021?
Joanna Lumley.
Joanna Lumley, nice.
Joanna Lumley's Japan. We start with Japan because on the car home from Charating, I think Obi Fiend on Twitter pointed out, he works for a man's, he was talking about like, oh, Joanna Lumley's Japan is my jam or something like that. And I was like, oh, what's this? Because I hadn't heard anything, didn't know anything about it. And then it's not new as well. It's Japan in 2016. Yeah. And there's a couple others that aren't on there. So that's what we've been watching.
Bye.
I was struggling with this and then I realized what it was. I went back to watch Dirty Money season 2 because I never finished season 2.
Right.
I don't know why that's. I don't think that's a great way to start a new year watching.
Too much Jared Kushner, man.
Just watching the Jared Kushner episode. I had to stop that 3 times. It was just too, you know, revolting and rage worthy. Yeah. Also, I've come to the conclusion Jared Kushner is a robot. I've not seen footage of him as much as I have until I saw that documentary, that episode on him. And man, it's as if he doesn't know how to walk. He just walks weird. He sits weird. He smiles weird. I don't think he knows how to do any of those things.
He's like the robot from Small Wonder grew up and they crammed it into a other type of shell.
Yeah.
It does look like, you know, a stereotypical 80s villain, like, you know, or Loot and Plunder. Is it Loot and Plunder from Captain Planet?
Loot and Plunder from Captain Planet, yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, oh, I'm just looking at photos here, and all of them look like he's like he's sneering at his animal-based henchmen in every single one for not getting that damn hero this week or whatever it is.
Watch him walk, dude. It's so weird. It's as if he doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's they're aliens and they're flailing about in their skin suits.
I started my year by watching the best show on television right now, Cobra Kai.
All right.
I am so addicted to this. You guys really need to get on that. It is great.
That's not week to week, right? That's all.
No. It's all done, which is the problem because apparently season three was apparently shot while it was still under YouTube Red. So it was shot quite a while ago. So season three was almost ready to go. And now with COVID and stuff, we have no idea when season four is coming out, but it has been renewed for season four. But it's an incredibly clever way to kind of revive and reboot a franchise. I mean, yeah, just shifting the focus to William Zabka's Johnny Lawrence and making him the protagonist. I mean, there's a scene in the first season where he sits down and tells one of his new students what was going on. And he's just like, yeah, man, I was just trying to get through my life. And this kid punk shows up from Jersey, punches me in the face, try to steal my girlfriend. I'm like, oh, that's...
I mean, it's like, Karate Kid Gaiden, right?
Yeah.
Side story.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
what's it called? The Wizard of Oz? Wicked. It's like Wicked for Karate Kid, right? Yeah. And there's lots of good hi-yas throughout.
Cool.
People that's in my house are not happy because I'm just like, eagle kick!
Just walking around.
Crane kick.
There we go. Wrong bird.
So check out Cobra Kai and let us know what you've been watching in 2021. I'm curious to know what you guys think of Death to 2020 as well, because I'm a huge Charlie Brooker fan, and for me this was just all kinds of disappointing. I would have cried because it felt like such a fall from grace.
Yeah, I mean, I always look forward to the Newswipe. I think I've gone off the Big Fat Quiz. I used to watch that one years ago, but I haven't watched it in a long time, so that was the Newswipe. When they were doing a new Newswipe, it was always good. But yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this podcast. Let us know what your plans are for 2021.
Your plans for 2021. What kind of sick joke is that? What the hell?
You opened the podcast by criticizing me for being all dismal talking about death, right? I'm trying to be hopeful at the end. You know, tell us, are you going to visit any place new?
Ooh, harsh.
You're going to get that vaccine? I don't know. Talk to us about your movie resolutions, TV resolutions, anything you really want to watch. Tell us what your plans are for 2021. Talk to us about all the stuff you've been watching so far. What are you looking forward to? Disney Plus will likely be launching in Malaysia at some point over the next few months. I mean, there's a date in Singapore already, so we're quite excited about that. And also, they've been hiring, so it looks like they're looking to make original Malaysian content too, which is something very few of the global streamers are doing. So, hey, there's some stuff to look forward to.
And, you know, I am looking forward to the Oscars next year when all the awards will be going to Monster Hunter.
Correct.
Which seems to be the only movie that's actually going to come out in cinemas this year.
Mila Jovovich has been robbed her whole life.
We hope.
Yeah. Finally, Mila Jovovich and Ron Perlman. Long deserved. Don't forget to reach out via all of our social medias. That's GogglerMY. Also email us like Marcus just did on podcast@goggler.my. Leave a comment, rate us on any of your favorite podcast apps because that really helps us out. You've been listening to another exciting episode of the Goggler Podcast.